Welcome to the Elks Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into the last position here, the tight end position, and looking at contracts and potential guys up for new contracts at the end of next year, as well as potential cut candidates here. So we'll start off with the three guys that are really are franchise tag guys. We've got David Njoku. We've got Mike Gesicki, and we've got Dalton Schultz. Listen, I think each one of them has their own interesting case about where they are. Gesicki's been a little bit more volume guy. One thing that surprised me with Gesicki has been when you look at his statistical profile, you would expect, hey, the addition of Jalen Waddle capped some of the ceiling. It's actually his career high in targets, target share last year at 18.2%. It's really good for a tight end. So is he going to be one that we're going to have like a huge, huge volume on with Tyreek Hill coming? Probably not, but I do think some of those narratives are funny about him. So I think firmly in the mid to late running tight end one type range for him, totally possible despite the Tyreek Hill addition. Njoku is a little bit less in that range, I would say. I think he's more in the back half tight end one into tight end two range. Schultz, I think of the three guys, he's the one that's the most interesting. Loses Amari Cooper, loses Cedric Wilson. They don't really bring anyone in that's going to be a huge difference maker in terms of targets. He ranks sixth at the position in targets in 2021 with 101, and he could get better. So that's the one that I think has the ability to really punch above where he's going in some of these more recent drafts. Just by way of reference, their draft position here over the past month includes Schultz at tight end. His median is 8.5. Then you look down, Gesicki is 12. There's a pretty sizable gap there, and then Njoku is 18 as well. So there's some difference there going down further and at the position, some split there. So I think Schultz is rightly getting the right uptick in value. Gesicki in the middle there, and then Njoku coming in a little bit later. I think that's probably the right ordering of things. Dawson Knox is interesting as well. He comes in. He's actually sort of in the Gesicki range there, and tight end premium. It's like the ninth round. They're at the 11-12 range of the tight end position. Knox finished 12th in points per game last year at 10.8. Career high in receptions, 49. Receiving yards, 587, touchdowns, 9. But again, it's 50 and 500, right? So be careful there in terms of overvaluing that. He's been primarily, like, the biggest aspect of him has been some of the red zone stuff. And you wonder, you know, is he a guy that can sort of break out of that 50 and 500 mold? Or is he just going to be in that and playing the touchdown variance game? Because if that's what he is, he's not a guy we want to target at tight end 11. But if he has sort of a 65 and 800 in his range of outcomes, that could make him worthwhile there. We haven't seen that out of him, but he has gotten better each year. And, I mean, this is the year for it. And then, listen, I think he's probably set up for a franchise tag type deal next year. All right, Evan Engram on a one-year deal with Jacksonville. Again, I find him to be a little bit more palatable. Like, he's cheaper than Njoku by a couple of rounds in startup ADP, which I think is a startup RDP in tight end premium leagues. I think that's interesting. It's the 12th round. I'm in a league where he's probably going to be in my tight end 3-4 type consideration. Totally there. And again, how do you punch way above your weight? Well, you be in a Doug Peterson offense. Breakouts of Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. And he had his best year. Engram did as a rookie, 5-year turbulent change of quarterbacks, change of coaches, 4 different head coaches over that 5-year span, numerous offensive coordinators as well. You get to play in a system with Doug Peterson. We sort of know, we have proof of concept of what that does for tight end. So I'm pretty interested there. Irv Smith's another one that, like, I have a It's interesting because like he's going ahead of Joku, he's going ahead of Ingram, he's going ahead of like Hunter Henry. He's kind of going right behind Zach Ertz and Cole Kmet. And I look at that and I'm like, ugh, like he's done basically nothing. He's coming off an injury and we seem to be overvaluing him a little bit. How does he make a big difference? It's not something we don't have a great proof of concept on him making a big difference either. So it gives me a little bit of pause. And he sort of reminds me a little bit of like a Gerald Everett type arc of what would his success look like. Maybe after this year, playing like a 1 year prove it deal type of thing, barring a big time breakout. So that would be sort of the concern that I have with him is what's the ceiling look like? Again, if you're making bets between tight end 8 and 20, you kind of need a good argument. I just don't have a great one for Smith, so he's kind of an avoid guy there. Some other guys that are interesting in terms of guys playing on really 1 year deals. Hayden Hurst is on a prove it deal. They lost 80 target CJ Uzama last year for Cincinnati. So that's interesting. And Hurst, he has a record of top 12 seasonal finishes, seasonal production there the year before Pitt's arrival. So in Atlanta. So that's interesting. I'm interested in him. He's way down the dial, you know, tight end 29 in the most recent RDP. Austin Hooper's next one up. He's a 1 year deal with Tennessee. Again, he's sort of way down there as well in that 28, 29 range. They don't have a clear answer at the offense, really, other than Derrick Henry, and that Ryan Tannehill's going to start. Questions about how Treylon Burks is going to transition. Questions about how Robert Woods is going to come back from injury. Questions about basically the surrounding cast there. Questions about, frankly, how Hooper's going to fit in. But again, you start piecing together how do you make a big difference? He's one that I think is interesting from just a volume perspective, where a guy like, for example, Higbee's going a couple rounds earlier. I'll talk about him in a second. There's not a big time. You can't make a great case for him way out producing his thing. With Hooper, you can make a case for he could lead his team in targets. I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but it's certainly not an unreasonable one. So I think that's an interesting aspect about Austin Hooper. Last one here that interests me in terms of 1 year guys, OJ Howard is really planning a 1 year deal in Buffalo. So you're a little dubious there in terms of what his ceiling could look like. But we have seen him in short sample sizes be really productive on a route run basis. And that's something that interests me. And that's something I think, again, you don't pay a ton for, right? This is the Firkser thing. Well, Firkser was a stupid investment because, you know, we should have known it was going to work out. Now, Firkser is a very cheap investment. And hey, listen, if things go right and he gets a lot of volume, we sort of know that he's been really good in small volumes. It's better to do that than and hope it sort of carries over than to just sort of take a guy that kind of blends in. So that's kind of that would be my pitch for OJ Howard. Again, he's way late. He's basically being, I mean, essentially undrafted. He's like a tight end in like the 40s, 50s type range there. So not even a ton of sample size out there in real draft position about leagues going that deep. So you get the idea there. Back end of the roster. Again, and listen, if things don't turn out well, if he gets caught, something like that, you can cut him. You have no obligation to hold on to him. Now look at some of the potential cut candidates. Not a ton of them. Around the league, I went and scoured them all. Ertz cap hit. It's like almost $13 million next year. Ton of it's dead. Basically, I could save $2.85 million. It's a $12.85 million cap hit, if we're being precise. I mean, it's really a 2 year deal. So that's I had some pretty good insulation there, honestly. Like some premium formats, he's going to be just a gobble up innings, if not. You know, be a solid tight end one. So, I mean, he's like a flex weekly starter in that format. So excited about Ertz there. Again, it's a 2 year window, and I outside of him just totally falling apart. And you know, what's we say? There's a very simple rule with tight ends, and it's a very simple rule. You take guys that have done it. And you bet that they're going to continue to do it, like the real good ones, right? The real good, you know. I don't know if Ertz is a Hall of Famer, but like that he's basically the tier below that, And you just, as long as they have a starting job, you continue to bet on them to produce. And that's where we're at with Ertz. So excited about him. No guarantees for Gerald Everett after this year. He's got an $8 million cap hit, four dead, four cap savings. So we'll see there how he, and he's got a golden opportunity to really capitalize in LA. So we'll see how that unfolds. Tyler Higbee, $7.7 cap hit in 2023. They could, there's about $1.4 million dead. They could save $6.25 million in cap by against the cap by cutting him. This is the final season of his contract. Excuse me, 2023 is the final year of his contract. So next year will be the final year of his contract, and he's going to be in his 30s. So we'll see there. I mean, I think some interesting speculative shots to potentially benefit from that. Jacob Harris, I think, is interesting, and he would be one that from deeper. He was a popular buzz candidate in training camp last year, and I remember people getting really excited about him, and then he didn't record a catch. So you have that, and he's a little bit more of a, I think he's more of a project. He's like a tweener convert. So we'll see there. He's a potential guy that I'm sure is going to draw some attention. And Bryson Hopkins as well, deeper down the line. Kendall Blanton be another one. But yeah, I don't think there's not a clear cut answer on the depth chart. But we'll see going forward if they add someone, or if this is maybe a candidate to bring someone as a cut or something. There was a cut someplace else or something like that. Maybe it's a restructure of Higbee and they just kind of play it out. So we'll see. But Higbee has kind of proven that he's just a guy more than he is a difference maker. And I'm not sure they're going to pay $7.7 million. And they've shown a willingness to sort of move on from that, from bad money in the past. Last one here that's interesting, and interesting because I have a selfish John Bates angle to this. Logan Thomas is $8.75 million and a cap hit, and he has $3.5 million dead, $5.25 million in cap savings by cutting him. And I'm not sure what his status is health-wise. We haven't seen a full, we haven't seen him really doing anything. So we don't know sort of what the arc is, and they could save a good chunk of what he's owed against the cap next year and in 2024. It's not guaranteed any money. So we'll see how that unfolds with his recovery as well. But this could be the last year of his deal. And listen, if this is a situation where he's not healthy, John Bates is interesting. Played well enough last year to be relevant in flex considerations or depth option on your bench that could listen. If it's a situation like Logan Thomas, just think of the Logan Thomas profile. Just be available and run basically all the routes, and you perform your way to a top 10 finish. And that's basically what he did. And there's a chance for a guy like John Bates to do it as well. So interested there. We'll see what Logan Thomas's recovery looks like. And so that'll pretty much put a wrap up on this podcast. I realized at this point of the show that I actually recorded it on the wrong headset. So I'm sorry about that. If the audio is a little off, I realized it 14 minutes into the show. So we'll work on getting that fixed last time. That's what I get for editing my podcast at a Starbucks. It just reverted to my headphones instead of the actual microphone that I have. So hope that didn't screw up too much, and maybe you're just realizing it now. But that'll do it for this edition. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.